This is a Dice World production in association with Pants Pending Studios. Hello, my gentle snowflakes. This is Dice. You know me as host of The Social Hour, but now you can find me every Tuesday hosting the brand new Drink and Debate podcast. The Drink and Debate is an improv comedy competition in which four teams of comedians from all over the Pacific Northwest face off for beer, glory, and the title of Master Debaters. Wait, what? For beer, glory, as they master debating. Shit. Master to debater. It still sounds like I'm saying masturbate. Master to... son of a bitch. Screw it, we're doing it live! As comedians debate some things, so join us on the Drink and Debate podcast. Every Tuesday, you can find us on socialhourpod.com or on iTunes. And find the Drink and Debate live shows every month at the Spokane Comedy Club, hosted by myself and comedian Nick Cavassier. Go to SpokaneComedyClub.com for all the details. We'll see you there.
Stop looking at me in the eye when I'm talking. I'm a celebrity! I'm Burr Martin from the Burr Martin Experience. Never heard of me? You remember a while ago when every time you opened up your internet browser, there was some chubby dude in a white tank top making fun of his daughter's selfies? Yeah, it was me. So the good news is I'm hosting a podcast, which is audio. That means you don't have to look at me. I'm also a geek and have been into comics for as long as I can remember. So as the internet dubbed me Selfie Dad, I'll be talking to parents and kids about growing up, being geeks, and how they got to be where they are now. Look, it's only an hour every other week, and since my wife is listening, the podcast is kid-friendly and family-approved. Let's call it your PG-13 podcast, but I should probably say a little more Bad News Bears and a lot less Shark Boy and Lava Girl. So look for the Burr Martin Experience every other Sunday night where you can find me on pantspending.com, iTunes, or wherever quality podcasts are found. Yeah, every other week. What am I, a machine?
Quit looking me in the eye! I see you doing it! Where's my brown M&Ms? Just the brown ones.
You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
I completely agree with you, Deez.
Get ready for The Social Hour.
Live from Wingman Brewers in Tacoma, Washington, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, Deese sits down for a special one-on-one episode with owner of Wingman Brewers, Ken Thoburn, and now your host. He screwed up the first half of the audio on this episode because, what do you expect, he'd been running around at breweries for the last week. Deese Casillas.
Malapin, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am your host, Deese Casillas. Thank you for joining us for another episode. I am hanging out live in Tacoma, Washington at Wingman Brewers in the heart of, I don't know, what area of Tacoma is this?
We're in the Dome District.
The Dome District. That's it. We're in the Dome District. I'm hanging out with Ken. And say your last name for me, Ken. I'm
sorry. Thoburn.
Thoburn. Ken Thoburn. He is one of the owners and brewers here at Wingman Brewers. So happy to be down here, man. First of all, I love you guys' beer. The first time I had your
Thank
beer
you.
Was the what is it? The peanut butter.
Oh, the peanut butter cup porter.
Yes. I found it at the place we were just talking about, the Museum of Beer, actually. And there was a couple bottles of it, and I had one, and I loved it so much I went back and bought every bottle I could find of it.
Oh, well, thank you.
And then I think that might have been the first time I talked to you guys. It was about a year ago or so. We were doing a featured beer of the week on the podcast at the time, and when I featured that one, because that was
okay.
Great.
Yeah, I remember you now, actually.
Yep, there you go. That was.
There was a woman on your podcast as well.
It was at the time. Well,
okay.
It still is. It's a different woman.
All right.
Like women in my love life. So, Just kidding, Jay. I love you. But yeah, happy to be here. It's a cool little spot. You guys have. So I'm actually surprised by how the size of this place compared to how much beer you guys crank out. I was, take this in the spirit it's intended, I was expecting like a massive operation considering how often and how much of your beer I see around. How long have you guys been open for?
We've been open for 6 years now, or maybe 6.5. And I agree, we make as much beer as we possibly could with the equipment that we have.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, so you guys, did you open with the plan of being a production brewery as opposed to being kind of a local tap room? Because it seems in 6 years you guys have done quite a bit with the size and volume. It's a lot more impressive than even larger breweries with bigger, producing more beer.
For us, we started with very little money, so we hoped that we could grow to the size we are now, and we're excited about our growth in the future. But where maybe some breweries build and have the money to or resources to build for what they want to be in the future, we have just had to build for what we have the resources for at the time. So everything we use, you know, maybe gets used for two or three different things here, and it's a little bit more work, but eventually, you know, we hope that it will pay off. And with our future expansion in 2018, we hope that that'll be the last time we have to worry about not having enough space. It's local, but it's not somewhere that people will be able to go see us make beer. There's not going to be a tap room there.
So does that mean turning this space into a larger tap room and eliminating the brewery here? Or does that mean just having a larger remote brewery and keeping the tap room?
We're still going to make beer at our current location here in Tacoma, but it will be more of our specialty products that get made here. At our new location, we'll be making the kind of fast-moving packaged products. So we'll be making the Ace IPA, the P51 Porter, the beers that go in cans and are on draft in a lot of locations around the area. Sure. Same with, we have a series of beers that's our Bomber series, so folks are familiar with the peanut butter cup beer we make, the coconut porter that we make. The most recent addition to the Bomber series has been the Hop of the Walk IPA, which people have been very excited about. So we'll continue to brew those big batches at our new location, and then make the fun stuff here. And hopefully we'll be able to start doing more lagers, sours, barrel age projects. That's our real passion and what we really like to do. So. Yeah.
You know, the sours and things like that. Which, let's talk about that for a minute. I've got a
question. Alrighty.
We'll get back to the history of the brewery in a second, but since we're there, we'll just jump right into it. Because I'm a huge fan of sour beers. In fact, I'm drinking your raspberry wheat beer, which is just an amazing looking beer. I mean, this is like a ruby color, had a nice pink head on it when it came out. Tart, not necessarily, has a sour quality, but not necessarily would you quantify this as a sour beer or?
So, it's a blend, and it is a sour style, but my personal palate and the way that I like to blend our beers is so that they're tart and not like tooth meltingly sour. So the Rasmus Attack is a blend of a raspberry wheat beer and a barrel-aged sour. So we have some wine barrels, actually, for folks listening. There are some wine barrels kind of near Dees and I, and we produce an all-pediococcus fermented blonde. And beer. And the Pediococcus is a bacteria that takes a long time to mature, takes a long time to create kind of sour flavor and lactic acid. But it's a much smoother, more delicate kind of sourness than the lactic acid that Lactobacillus produces. So Lactobacillus is the bacteria that's in your sour cream or your yogurt or a lot of those kind of probiotic sorts of foods. And the sour from that is much more harsh and more acidic. And so we prefer to have kind of a smoother sourness. And then...
Does it create more balance? Gives you a little more balance in the palate instead of just kind of that punch. It gives you a smoother all the way through.
Yes. So I think balance is the perfect word. So we use raspberry juice, single-strength raspberry juice from Yakima. So it's all kind of a local ingredient, and it's not treated harshly. We get it before they, you know, before they're freezing it, before they're reducing it into a concentrate. We get a fresh raspberry juice. So for folks who love kind of farm to table and all of that kind of movement of eating food fresh, it does taste better, it does smell better, and we can all experience that with food, but it works the same in beer. If you get fresh ingredients, if you get the best ingredients, the beer also will taste better.
Sure, yeah, it does definitely transform, right? It's just like cooking. You know, you get the better ingredients, the best ingredients, you're getting a better quality of food, and you better product at the end result. So, are the sours kind of where you guys want to take the brewery eventually? Is that the main goal, or is that just one of the kind of arms of the brewery?
Well, I think it's all, again, balance. Everything's kind of a balancing act, and for us right now at our size, we're just cranking out as much porter and IPA as we can, and then here and there we get to make some really fun beers. But in the future, we hope that with larger production capabilities, we can make more lagers, we can make more sours, we can work more on our spontaneous fermentation program. We just built a cool ship this last fall, and it's been really fun, and we are really excited to see how that beer turns out. But there,
cool ship sounds like a cruise line.
Yeah.
The cool ship.
Yeah, for
White Snake is on there.
I like that. Well, so a cool ship is kind of before there was chillers that work like radiators, water kind of chillers where hot unfermented beer goes in one side and cold water goes in the other, and you can cool the beer down to fermentation temperature. Before there was that, they used cool ships, which are kind of big, shallow dishes that you can put the beer in, the unfermented beer, the wort, and then it cools down overnight and at the same time is inoculated with wild yeast and bacteria in the air. So if you've heard of the style lambic, that's traditionally a cool shipped product that has the specific bacteria and yeast found in Belgium. Yeah, I think I wish I knew a little bit more about this, actually, but the whole kind of Flanders region, the which is part of Belgium, in that area is kind of where some of the most currently famous sour products come from. But before the invention of the microscope, you know, all beer was probably sour to some extent. Yeah, I started brewing in college, like a lot of people do. I learned from a friend that made beer and it tasted terrible, and he said you can make beer, and I was like, okay, well, let's try this. So it sounded really fun. And there happened to be a homebrew store right by the university I went to, so I convinced my buddy Derek that he should, you know, give me half the money to buy the equipment and do half the work, and we had a great time with it and made a lot of beer, and it became kind of a hobby of ours. And then our friend Daniel was going to University of Washington, Tacoma, and studying business there. And he came over to a barbecue we had and was surprised at how good the beer was and how fast everyone there was drinking it. Told us we should sell it. And we said, we're not interested in selling it, but if you want to, we'll make it. So that's kind of how our company started. And since then, we've worked really hard to hone our skills from those of homebrewers to those of commercial brewers.
And do any of those original recipes carry over now, or a version of them?
So the first beer we ever made, we have pictures of on Facebook that are there now, not on our personal pages. And it was awful. It didn't ferment well. It was very sweet. We didn't know what we were doing. But later that same year, we were brewing again, and we made a green beer for St. Patrick's Day. And it just so happens our friend's birthday is also, well, it's maybe a day or two around St. Patrick's Day. And he's I don't know, 6'10", 6'11". So we called it the Tall Order Porter or the Tall Ass Porter. That recipe, since we made it that one time, has been the P51 Porter recipe.
Still,
yeah, still going.
Does it change at all? I mean, when you scale up, it probably changes a little because things aren't a perfect one-for-one.
Yes. It hasn't changed much in flavor. I would say when we with a larger brew house, we get a little better hop utilization, so we have been able to pull back on the hops. But it's still pretty much the same yeast, the same grains, and the same proportions as it was before. And we brewed it at another brewery for a while because we couldn't keep up with demand here. And the brewer there said, I would never put this much specialty malt, dark malts, into a beer. It costs too much money. And we said, well, you know, people seem to like it, so we're going to keep doing that.
Yeah. You know, but I mean, that's part of the unique flavor of it, because I've had that porter. It's actually one of my favorite porters. Because once I discovered you guys through the peanut butter cup porter, you know, I definitely sought out more good beers and have quite a few of them now. And I'm a big lover of dark beers.
All right.
Browns to stouts is really, like, a good porter is my sweet spot for a beer. I don't think it gets any better than that. Maybe a good sour also, but a good, which is weird, the juxtaposition between a sour and a
yeah.
Probably. But it's a really great porter. I mean, it's rich, but it's not too heavy. It gives a lot. I mean, we'll talk about it a little bit. We'll probably taste a little here soon. But the, you know, why all the malts? What was the original idea of putting everything in there? Was it just not knowing what you were doing as much, or just you were really trying to pull
So I would say it came from a lot of actual kind of work on the part of Derek and I. At the time, our favorite two beers on the planet were the Harmon makes the Puget Sound Porter, and Lazy Boy up in Everett had the Lazy Boy Porter, and we thought those were the best beers around. The Harmon, their porter is, you know, it has the roasty quality, has the chocolate quality, and it's low in alcohol content. The Lazy Boy porter, gosh, the first time we had that, I remember ordering that at Magoo's Annex in Tacoma, which, for folks are from this area, it's kind of a divey place, but it's a great place, and they had it on tap. We ordered one pint, Derek and I both had it, and then we just went up and bought a pitcher of it because it was so good. I know the Harmon still makes Puget Sound Porter, and Lazy Boy, I believe, still makes Lazy Boy Porter, but those beers are really great. And so we tried to wizard out, you know, what they were doing to make that beer so great, and then we made the beer, like I said, for a friend's birthday party, and he asked for a really strong beer, so we wanted it to be strong. And then we went to the homebrew store, to Beer Essentials over in Parkland, and we talked to the guys there, and we had kind of a general idea. And there's an employee that was a former employee there named Bruce, who's a great guy. He helps out a lot at Puyallup River Brewing Company. And he told us, hey, you can't make this beer without this particular malt. It's a Weyermann malting company out of Bamberg, Germany, and they make a malt called Carafa. So Bruce, really, we owe him a little bit for the his tip in that recipe, yeah. And then, you know, after that, we were really happy with it. And it's the only time I think that I can remember that we had a party or a barbecue or something where everyone was just drinking porter and just talking about the beer. It was a really odd party, you know, St. Patrick's Day / birthday party. And we were drinking first a keg of green beer that we made. And then we ran out of that real quick. And so then everyone started drinking the porter. And suddenly the party just changed tune a little bit. It was just, it got quieter, but everyone was like, oh, what is this beer? I've never had a beer like this. So after that, we knew we needed to make that more.
Now, is it safe to say the porter's kind of used as flagship beer?
It's one of them. It's interesting, I would say, because we would say that we are probably most proud of the porter. We've won a lot of medals for it. We got a medal last year, a gold medal for it, being the best porter in the Pacific Northwest. Yeah, we're very proud of that beer. And at the same time, porter is not really the biggest beer category. It's like the ninth largest beer category. So our IPA actually slightly outsells it, but it's also in part because Fred Meyer will sell our IPA, but they don't really want to sell a porter. But if you look at some other local stores, they sell just as much porter as IPA because it's good. It also said that we needed to spend a lot more time on our IPA to us. Exactly. Well, and we look at other breweries like Deschutes. I mean, they made their name on the Black Butte Porter, which is an incredible product. Iron Horse Brewing does Irish Death, which is a really great product. Some people may have heard of Guinness, which is a pretty good product as well. So I think there's a place for dark beer,
right.
And it might scare some folks who normally drink yellow beer, but I would say to anybody who hasn't had it, it's like, do you want to only eat white cake, or would you like to try chocolate cake sometime? So I think dark beer versus light beer, same kind of thing. When we were first starting, I think for me, craft beer was younger, and the options, you know, in the grocery store were Pike Kiltlifter, which is a good beer, Killian's Irish Red, Pete's Wicked Ale. I mean, so, you know, Boston beers, Sam Adams. And so when I had beers like Puget Sound Porter or Lazy Boy Porter, it was life-changing for me. I thought, I didn't know beer could taste like that. And that's what got me into it. Sours weren't really a thing yet. Maybe they were available in Belgium or in, you know, places.
Some more obscure.
Yeah.
Yeah, there certainly wouldn't go to a tap room or a grocery store and find 10 sours around.
Exactly, and I think similarly, the kind of resurgence of craft lager, of Pilsners and Mexican lagers, international style lagers, Bohemian lagers, of all of that now, in Washington State has some amazing lager breweries. I think that it's fair to say that they're doing a great job in making incredible beer. I think at the time when I started drinking craft beer, dark beers, porter and stout, was something that people could make, and it would be identifiably different than the domestic beers that were on the market. So I was definitely excited about dark beer then. I'm excited about all kind of all beer now.
So what is, if you had to pick a beer for you personally, I mean, something's not yours, but what's a go-to beer for you? You're getting everything. What's a go-to beer for Canada?
It's hard to turn down a good Pilsner. I think in the Northwest we have some of the best of it. Frame down in Hood River makes an incredible Pilsner, and Chuckanut up in Bellingham and now Burlington, they make an incredible Pilsner. I feel like I'm never not in the mood for that style of beer. I think there's a reason it became the style that domestics, you know, distorted into the light American lager. But that's probably the beer style. If I could only drink one beer style again for the rest of my life, that I would go to.
I will give you a suggestion. Have you ever been to Montana?
I have.
You ever been to Missoula?
I've driven through Missoula.
Where were you going?
Bozeman.
Drive through Missoula. Don't stop. Just drive. I mean, you pass it on the 90.
We were going to Bozeman. Baron, yeah.
They're about to celebrate their 30th anniversary. I was just over there a couple weeks ago. They're a Bavarian-style brewery. And the brewmaster is actually from Bavaria.
All right.
And he makes a Pilsner that they pour, and they call it a five-minute pour. They literally take 5 minutes to pour this one beer.
Wow.
And it's got a head on it, just so creamy. It's amazing. You ever want a good Pilsner?
Baron.
It's worth the 5 to 7 hour drive. You're driving to Bozeman again.
All right. Yeah, I've had Baron Pilsner before, but never the 5 minute pour.
Yeah, they do it obviously only at the tap room, but they actually do a 5 minute pour on this one Pilsner. And it makes a difference. For any listeners, go back and listen to the Baron episode. That was a couple weeks ago, and he talks about why.
Well, now I got to go back and listen. I got to do my homework.
It's an interesting concept. I had never heard of that before. So when you get started, Wingman Brewers, you said this is your original location.
Yeah. Well, this isn't our original location. For about 8 months, we were in another location that was owned by University of Washington Tacoma. and we started up there kind of to test our idea to see if craft beer was what we wanted to do, if craft beer was something that could be supported in Tacoma. At the time, there was Engine House 9 and Harmon Brewing Company in Tacoma, and we were kind of the third dog in the race, and we were in a restaurant, and both those places were. So we started out, our beer was first sold at the Red Hot, which is a great place to go in Tacoma for beer or hot dogs. And after kind of some initial success there, we decided that we could risk doubling down and getting a larger space.
Okay. And it worked out, sounds like.
So far, so good.
So for only being like the third brewery in Tacoma and only being open 6 years, it seems like the brewery scene must have exploded in 6 years.
It's been incredible.
Yeah, you pull up Tacoma breweries and there's 15 in the area probably.
At least, yeah. I helped put together a South Sound Craft Crawl. It's a beer map. Out in Spokane, you guys have the Inland Ale Trail. And, I mean, there's different brewery maps all over the place. And I think we've got over 20 now in Pierce County where we have the map. And we go down into Thurston County for the folks in Olympia and Lacey. And it's been astounding how many breweries have opened and how many are making great product. For us, we wish we would have known that it was going to be just like this, or that we could have convinced someone with some money that it was going to be like this, because we feel like we could make a lot more beer.
Right, yeah, there's always that room for growth.
But yeah.
Obviously you're looking at opening a new location, bigger production, which means keeping up the cost of growth. So it sounds like it's working. It's just that, that initial go into it takes some time to...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now there's so many breweries getting into the game. You have to wonder if there's a bubble. At a certain point, is there a saturation point? And you guys are fortunate enough that you've grown, you've been through the growing pains, you make great beer, you're out there established. But some of these younger breweries, who's going to make the cut?
Yeah, I think there's a number of kind of things. I think it'd be really hard to do things the way that we did for anybody now. I think starting immediately with incredible beer quality and making clean, perfect beer is the first and most important thing. And then for people knowing that, for us starting as a one-barrel brewery, really hard to be successful doing that now when you are competing against people who are, opening with 15 or 10 or 20 or 7-barrel, brew houses. Or who have now, because of the age of craft beer, have gotten training and had experience in craft breweries. Where when we started, it sounds crazy, just 6 years ago, 6.5 years ago in 2011, there wasn't that many guys out there who had worked in craft breweries, who had the training and the knowledge that is pretty pervasive now. So I would say anyone who thinks that just because we started out the way we did that it's possible for them, I would say don't do it.
Yeah.
Find some money and start out right, and then know that you're not really going to make a lot of money. This industry is a labor of love, and something people do because they like it, not because they're going to become millionaires.
Yeah. It was like the UFC in its early days.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
You don't know what's happening. It might go fast, and now people are trained in mixed martial arts. And back then it was just the Wild West. Everyone's just trying to figure out what the hell's going on.
Yeah, it's just big dudes getting karate chopped in the head, and now you really see like the Muay Thai and the wrestling and the boxing all go into it. Yeah, that's a good comparison. Yeah, and that wasn't that long ago either. I do like MMA.
Do you ever go back and watch any of those old ones?
I have, yeah.
When you watch it, it's literally just like, it's like the Akumite in Bloodsport. I mean, the guys just get, there's no time limit. You're fighting multiple times a night.
The whole safety issue of fighting multiple times a night, the whole thing of like being able to hit people in the head. I mean, before that, watching Pride and that kind of thing, when they could kick people in the face. I mean, it wasn't a sport yet. It was still just guys fighting in a cage or guys fighting in a ring, but it wasn't really.
Yeah.
It wasn't. Yeah. No rules. Yeah. If there's a guy that dies, we'll just bury him out back. We got a pizza oven. It gets hot enough. Yeah. Who knows?
So why? I gotta ask why Wingman? Is there a reason why Wingman?
Well, initially, I owned for a very short time another company. You gotta fly. Sorry, I brought you in the back by the railroad tracks. Perhaps you'll die. I started up a little company called Wingman Records. Before I was in the beer industry, I was in the music industry, and I really enjoyed that, but it was a lot of work, and I wanted to be a little more sedentary, and so did all the rest of the people that I was with, and so we started a tried to get a record label going, until we realized there was just no money in that, and we wanted to have normal lives. So then I went to work for public schools in here in Tacoma, but yeah, it's probably a little bit better than the music industry, but
I do a podcast. I'm a stand-up comic.
Yeah, there you go. It's a grind, yeah. So I had started the Wingman Records, and I really liked that, and the whole kind of thing behind it was, it's kind of many layers to it. The first being that my grandfather was a pilot in World War II, and he's also a painter, and so he painted nose art. If folks are familiar with like the pinups and different cartoon kind of drawings on the side of airplanes, that's what my grandfather did, as well as flying. And I really liked that. I really liked how it looked. I have great memories of sitting next to him on a couch and seeing, you know, drawings of half-clothed women.
Seems reasonable for a young man.
Yeah. And then being here in Washington State, we have Boeing, we have McCord Air Force Base, and a lot of those World War II aircraft were Boeing planes. And on top of all of that, Tacoma has a really kind of gritty industrial feel to it that feels like an older time. That feels like the 1940s maybe, yeah. But just less racist and more accepting of gay people. Yeah. It's a little bit better here in Tacoma now than it was then.
Well, that's a better explanation than like Wingman, like I just try to get other people laid.
Yeah, well.
Like I'm just helping my buddy get laid tonight.
There was that great Coors Light commercial, and you know, hopefully we won't get sued for being partially inspired by that awesome Coors Light commercial with the guy with the acoustic guitar singing about being a wingman. But so that kind of double meaning there for wingman doesn't hurt either.
Did you play? You played music then?
I used to, yeah. Bass player.
Looked
like a bass player because he stands in the back where no one can see him.
For some reason, bass players always have the same like same demeanor. Something about a bass player. Like,
we'll just hold it together.
Yeah, you got the rhythm. You just down. You know, you do the work. You don't want the fame.
No, thank you. Yeah, that's why we're not on video today.
That's right. Exactly. That's why he declined.
Great.
All right, guys. We will see you right after these commercial breaks.
Hey, I'm that Andrew guy you were told about. Pants Pending Studios? Geek of all trades? Wait, no one told you to expect me? Ah, well, shit. I told them to tell you I was coming. No, well, let's get down to business. I came to present to you the best geek interview show ever! The Dracarium's Geek of All Trades podcast sits down with various geeks around the world, exposing their dark secrets and rummaging through their drawers. Oh, wait, I wasn't supposed to tell you that part. Anyway, it's a fun show where I sit down with a geek, whether they realize they're a geek or not, and ask them all kinds of questions. No matter how hard we try, we can't seem to stop being funny. So come over, give us a listen. Find us at celebrategeek.com/goat. Yes, GOAT. It's an acronym, get it? Hey, wait. Why are you turning the music up? I wasn't finished. No!
All right, and we are back, guys. We are still hanging out at Wingman Brewers in Tacoma, Washington. And if you guys are visiting the area, come check it out. They're at 509 and a half Puyallup Avenue in Tacoma, Washington. Don't get it mixed up. They're on Puyallup Avenue, but they're in Tacoma. They're right by the Tacoma Dome. And, guys, as always, check out all the shows on the Pants Pending Network. We've got a bunch of new shows coming out. Make sure to subscribe to all the shows. Go to pantspending.com. Check out all the new releases. Help us climb the charts over on iTunes. Rate and review all the shows. And kick us a couple bucks on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/pantspending. You can do a one-time donation or subscribe. You get a bunch of behind-the-scenes exclusive content and early releases of programs and more. So, but we are, more importantly, we've got a bunch of beer in front of us. Ken, still hanging out with Ken here. We're going to drink a couple of their beers, some of their usual suspects, some of their more unique ones they've got hanging out right now. So why don't you tell us about, we got two more golden color, two darker color ones. So let's tell us what we got here.
All right. Well, do you want to go one at a time or do you want to go?
Yeah, let's start. We'll just go one at a time here. We'll go through them.
So the one farthest on your right, that is our Por Que No. It's a Mexican lager.
All right.
So it's going to be very bright, really light in color. We use German Pilsner malt and a little bit of corn. And then hops from Germany and the Czech Republic. So you get a little bit of hop on the aroma,
yeah.
A little corn kind of sweetness in the finish, and that very crisp kind of lagery flavor.
Does kind of have that little Pilsner, like a sweetness on the nose. Definitely a light body, very smooth like a lager would be. So what defines it as a Mexican?
The yeast that we use, as well as the addition of a small amount of corn.
Oh, there you go.
So the corn gives it kind of a sweet finish. You'll notice that if you drink Pacifico or Tecate or a number of other kind of Mexican beers, there's a little bit of this kind of sweet finish. A lot of that, I guess, has to do with corn or with the yeast that they use.
Okay. You know, I was talking to some brewers recently who were saying that for a long time using things that were considered filler, like, you know, rice or corn and things like that, was kind of taboo. They were like, why did it become so taboo? They were really confused to why that was something that was not considered a quality ingredient, because if done properly, you can bring something to the table with that. You know, like you are with this, you're using corn to get a sweetness out of it. So it is accentuating and accenting it, not just, you know, filling space.
Yeah, I think people have associated corn or rice in beer with domestic beer. Mm-hmm. And in general, those breweries were probably looking for cheap adjunct sugars
right.
to take the place of barley. And you have things, I think off the air we were speaking about the Reinheitsgebot, the German purity laws for beer.
Right.
Where it has to be 100% barley. So you have those kind of things influencing people. I think in general also there's, even currently in craft beer, there's backlash to the use of adjuncts, the use of materials that are not traditional.
What is traditional anymore when it comes to craft beer? I mean, people are putting, you know...
You're talking to a guy who puts peanut butter and chocolate in beer.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
There was an article on Facebook, and someone that I respect said, you know, what are the three craft beer trends that need to change? And they said hazy IPAs, peanut butter in beer, and beer flights. And I was just like, I could disagree with all three of those.
Absolutely.
I think if you are making a hazy beer and you intend for it to be hazy, great.
Right.
If you're making a beer and it's hazy and you don't know why, not so good.
You're making an inferior product.
Yeah.
You need to refine your process. But no, I think in the craft beer industry, you're at a point now where it's just so experimental, and people are putting anything. I mean, people are putting habanero in beers. They're putting, there's a place in...
You want to get experimental, we can drink the next beer.
Oh, wow. This is okay.
So this is a thing for me. It's a big thing to me to be experimental, to push the boundaries. I believe if you're not innovating, then you're sedentary.
Right.
And what's the point, right? There's some great brewers out there that I mentioned, like Freeman Chuckanut, who make an amazing Pilsner. I'll make a Pilsner, too. I enjoy doing that. But I don't see a point in trying to compete on the market with those guys who I already like their product. Why? I'm not going to just, you know what, I'm going to make the same exact thing. Let's all make the same thing.
Right.
That's...
Everyone, I mean, everyone essentially loses at that point.
Yeah, there's not a real point. So I see they're really good at what they're doing. I'm going to become the best at what I do. And an example of that is this beer in front of us. Earlier you had our sour, the Rasma Attack, which is a raspberry, is a blended beer that's a raspberry wheat beer and a barrel-aged sour. This beer right here is a blend of a sour blonde ale and a wit. So you're familiar with wit, like Blue Moon is a Belgian-style wheat beer. And then we added guava paste as well as fresh mint picked from our distributors, our kind of local district manager picked from his garden. So
So that's a very unique combination of it's like it sounds like the fruitcake of beers. Like it just has the sour, it's got the mint, it's got the guava. What made that recipe come together? Was it you tried it and there weren't thing it wasn't quite right, so you added to it, or that was the original written
it was
recipe?
The original idea. It started kind of, we would get these guava candies in Thai food that we ordered into the brewery. The candies are actually sitting right behind you.
Yeah, they are.
We were inspired by these guava candies to make a guava beer, and so we started investigating.
Are there SARS on these?
What's that?
Is there SARS on these?
I don't know.
Just kidding.
Maybe. I eat them all the time. I'm falling apart, yeah, so maybe.
Sorry.
The
guava inspired
those
beers.
Yeah, those candies inspired us to work with guava. So we bought a big bag of them and, you know, did little experiments, what works well with guava, and just found by looking at cocktail recipes, by looking at what different chefs were doing, that mint is a great combination for flavor with guava, and it's summer.
Yeah.
And then some acidity in a lot of cocktail recipes that use guava and mint. There's also some form of acidity. So we thought a sour would do the trick there. So you'll notice it's not like a really sour beer again. That's not really what we are aiming for. But we want brightness and tartness, and then you get the fruitiness of the guava and the kind of cooling mint characteristic.
It's a very, very well-balanced thing. And the funny thing is you can taste every piece of that you just described. It's I get the sour mostly at the front end with the more of the body than the actual tart. It just kind of like the body of a sour, you know, that kind of mouthfeel. And then it kind of blends into the guava and that mint finish. Just little bit of accoutrement at the end.
Yeah.
It's
not like you brushed your teeth, but it's like, I don't know, you smelled a menthol cigarette or something.
Yeah.
You smelled a piece of gum.
Sure.
I don't know.
It is just very, very subtle at the end, but it's good. I will say this, I don't like mint or spicy drinks. Mint and spicy food, no problem. For some reason, I don't enjoy them in my drink, but this is, I could definitely drink this. It's not a mint. It's not like a mojito, you know. But I want to touch on one thing you said that was really interesting. The fact that of going through cocktail recipes and looking at even food recipes, what chefs are doing. I've never heard another brewer say that. Is that common in the industry, or is that just something you guys kind of...
It's something I like to do. I think in particular... we do an event every year called Porter Palooza, and we take the P51 Porter and we do 11 to 15 different variations of it. I also ask chef friends about food pairings with beer. And so all of our bottles have food pairings on them. And when I look at for Porter Palooza, I'm like, okay, what are innovative things that people are doing with ice cream or with food or cocktails, innovative flavor combinations. Because, you know, 15 years ago, if you said, oh, I'm going to put, you know, sea salt on top of this caramel, people would tell you to get out.
Right.
But it's a great flavor combination.
Yeah.
And there's a number of those kinds of things that as craft beer, craft cocktails, craft foods are kind of craft foods of the sea are kind of expanding, right? That great things are happening. New ideas are coming through. And I may not be the person who is the first person to say, you know, guava and mint go together really great. But I can be one of the first people to maybe try it in a beer.
Yeah. So what would your cohorts, your purist cohorts say about something like this with the guava and the mint? Is this too far out of the barn? You too much?
You know, I try not to listen to those people. I think we
Which
have...
Which is the best way to be.
Yeah, we have a great following of folks who are interested in drinking beer because it's good, not because someone tells them it's good.
Yeah.
And I always say I want the customer to decide. And I honestly, like, we made the peanut butter cup beer that you like so much. We made that for Porter Palooza.
Oh, we got a...
Oh, we got Amtrak.
Yeah. Amtrak's
so
going
I would
by.
Say, like, the peanut butter cup we made for Porter Palooza, that was... One that we didn't know if people were going to like it or not.
Sure.
We thought people might find it disgusting, but instead people really liked it. And we're one of the first breweries in the country to put peanut butter and chocolate in a beer.
Yeah.
And to really workshop all the different ways we could do that. Before we made the peanut butter cup beer, we actually made a beer for Strange Brew Fest out in Port Townsend, Washington, where we wanted to emulate the flavors that are in a Chico Stick candy bar. So it was coconut and peanut butter. And we had to do a lot of different tests with different kinds of peanut butter and different, and you know, in different ways to try and get the flavor we wanted in the beer. And I think anybody who tells you that there shouldn't be peanut butter in beer, for instance, they just don't know how to do it right.
Yeah.
'Cause when it's done right, it tastes great.
Yeah.
And that's all that should matter when you're making a consumable product. Is it good? Do you like it?
Right.
Great.
Then
were we responsible with how we got all our ingredients and we're not, you know, destroying
right.
the planet?
Free range peanut butter.
Yeah.
The
Adam's peanut butter.
Yeah, of course. Y'all natural. We had to stir it first. What's interesting, what I like about the because I'm into the creativity of beer. Like I mean, don't get me wrong, I love a good classic. Even just an amber. I mean, like the amber style is so innocuous, but one of like a good amber is one of my favorite beers.
Oh yeah.
But what I really enjoy, you know, I travel a lot and I build whole trips around breweries in an area. What I found, you know, I'll just talk about Spokane because I live there. There's a couple breweries there that make really, really, really good beers. And they've got like 5 beers and they knock them out the park. They're dialed in. There's never going to be any variation. They're great. But you're never going to find a new beer. And to me, at a certain point, I'm now bored. Yes, you make great beers, but I like breweries that are constantly looking at new things because it gives me reason to keep coming back. Yeah, there's the flagships, but I also want to experiment. I want to try. You know, I mean, there's a brewery in Spokane that does old style beers like Groots and really
Bellwether.
Unique style beers. Not my styles of beer on most of them. Just not my flavor palette. But I always go in there and try new beers because I want to try them. Generally, not you know, necessarily my favorite beers, but I love what they're doing. Because it's experimental and they're trying to, you know, and they have a huge following for what they do, you know. So there's room for everything in between, you know.
I agree. And actually, I was thinking about this morning, so I'm glad that we are getting to talk about it. This article reading about, you know, how all these different ingredients that are in beer now and all, you know, are deviating from what made craft beer great. Was, you know, porters, ambers,
yeah,
blondes, all these great ale styles coming back. And then people, you know, building on the lager styles and recreating some of the great things that are happening in Europe. But ultimately, from the eastern side of the state, you had Yakima Brewing Company and Burt Grant. And one of the beers that made that place famous was Burt Grant's Perfect Porter. And the next beer in our flight is actually the same recipe that he used to use.
Oh, wow.
And that recipe included vanilla extract.
Which I think is a great addition to a porter.
It is. We use Bourbon Madagascar vanilla beans because we think they're a little bit better than the vanilla extract we could get a hold of. But I think for anyone who says, oh, I don't want that beer because it has fruit in it or chocolate in it or peanuts in it or whatever, it, you know what? We've been putting stuff in beer forever.
Yeah.
The German purity laws came around because people were putting other things in beer. In Belgium, they're putting fruit in beer. It's nothing's changed.
Well, and no one's taking away your porter.
Oh, yeah.
Or no one's taking away a classic amber or a lager. Those are still out there. They're not being replaced. People are just experimenting more.
Yeah.
And, the experimentation can potentially create a whole new segment of beer. Sours have become an actual segment of beer. Whereas a few years ago, I don't think people would, if you said sour to most people, that wouldn't have been kind of a style of beer necessarily for the most people around in the craft industry.
Well, and now I think what blows my mind is just going over to areas like Spokane where you're from and how popular sours are getting so quickly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's, I think what it is it can be really fun and interesting to say in a different realm to, if you and I were to sit down and try 10 different kinds of vanilla ice cream, we could pick out which one was the best. We could, taste the nuance and where the vanilla came from, who got the best cream, who has the best technique in making it. Is that what we want to discuss, or is it more fun to discuss 10 different things that are all unique?
Right.
With moose tracks and, sorbet and gelato, and we could try some things that are all kind of the same basic family
of
ice creams, but different and interesting and exciting because of that.
Yeah, you're comparing, on a micro level instead of a macro level. You're able to expand to the larger nuances instead of just the tiny differences. So
yeah, and I think that's the thing, is some folks really love to focus on the small things, and because of that, they perhaps disregard things that are outliers or oddities. But I like pineapple on my pizza.
Yeah.
And anyone who says I shouldn't put pineapple on my pizza, I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah. Well, innovation. That's how, as it goes. And it's funny to see the parallels between, you mentioned the Porterfest you guys do. What'd you call it? I'm sorry.
Porterpalooza.
Porterpalooza.
Every January.
And and pairing it with food. And how, you mentioned the trends of mint in the culinary world.
Yeah.
And the parallels between beer and how food has gotten so adventurous and experimental over the last few years. And you see beer doing the same thing.
Yep.
Do you want to just keep eating your mom's meatloaf? That was it's probably good. It's a fine meatloaf.
Yeah.
You can put ketchup and eat that meatloaf, but or you
can try different things.
You can try something else. So, all right. Well, what do we got?
Okay.
So the next one
is the Proctor Porter. So we worked on this recipe with one of the former brewers of Yakima Brewing Company, and it is Burt Grant's Perfect Porter recipe. The only difference is the malts that we have now, and the use of vanilla bean instead of vanilla extract. We made this beer for Peaks and Pints, which is a bar in Tacoma, and we think it turned out great. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's definitely got a little richness to it. Got a little booze. What's the ABV on this?
It's actually not that high. I think it's about 5.5%.
Really? It's got a little warmth, a little boozy boozy taste to it for how.
So it's I think at the time there were less ingredients available to brewers, so it's a pretty simple concoction of pale malt and chocolate malt and vanilla bean, and just that's
it.
It's I mean, you think back to, like I was talking about, or like Pete's Wicked Ale, or some of those kinds of early craft beers, or early, I don't know what you'd even call them nowadays, but
yeah,
there's a simplicity there. It's not bad, but you taste the malt, the alcohol, you know, the yeast, those kinds of
things.
And the
hop, you kind of like, okay, yeah. I got those ingredients and that's it. So
yeah, and I think recreating a beer like that was a really fun exercise and experiment. And so far, it's I think they said it's still the best-selling beer at the bar. So
wow, there you go. That's a compliment there. So real quickly, taking it back to the Porterpalooza, what is the best experimental porter in the Porterpalooza you made?
So far, the most popular has been the Peanut Butter Cup.
Okay, that was one of them.
We did the very first year, the coconut porter was probably the most popular, and then we put it in a bottle. I think in the third year we tried Peanut Butter Cup after our success with the Chico Stick beer, mm-hmm. At Strange Brew, and people just bugged us about making Peanut Butter Cup so much that we made it again and again, and took it to some festivals, and eventually it found its way into a bottle and apparently into the hearts of a lot of people.
There you go. Oh, I'm going to shoot something your way, and you feel free to use this or don't. Next January, if I come through and it's here, we'll see.
All right.
Blueberry.
Blueberry. We've done that.
You have?
Yeah.
Blueberry and porter is great.
Blueberry and coffee blueberry.
Coffee blueberry.
So there's a okay. coffee roaster in Tacoma called Bluebeards, and they had a particular roast. Golly. I can't tell you what it was because I would tell you the wrong part of the world. I'd be like, oh, it's Ethiopian. And they'd be like, no. That was right. From South America. So yeah, I'm not even going to try. But Kevin, the roaster there is very talented and had a coffee that to me tasted like blueberries. And then we used blueberry puree and mixed it all up. And had a blueberry coffee porter.
Nice.
And we've also done a just blueberry as well.
I was going to say, and this goes back to the experimentation thing, but I think a lot of places hesitate to put, generally, fruit beers are very light beers.
Yes.
I think people are missing out on a segment of browns to porters with blueberry or raspberry, yeah. Like a raspberry and a good brown or a porter even.
Cherry.
There's a lot of room for really, really tasty beers in that, you know, with a little bit of that fruit and, you know, the darker beer segment.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think our brewery has been lucky to find our niche in that we put out two beers a year in bottles that are variations of our porter. We're going to put out a third variation. So we do the Peanut Butter Cup and we do the coconut, which is the beer we're going to drink next. But also this year, the beer that was probably the most popular at Porterpalooza this year was the S'mores Porter.
Okay. Yeah.
And we were hesitant to release it in package because there's another brewery in Portland that does one.
Base Camp.
Yeah, they do a very good job, and the presentation they even like
put a marshmallow on there. Yeah.
So we didn't want to try and encroach on their business at all because I thought that was a great beer. And,
sure. Unique, you know. You don't want to.
Yeah.
You don't,
exactly. Right. And I mean, since it's funny because, like this coconut porter we're gonna drink. The only other coconut porter I knew of on the market at the time was Maui coconut porter.
Sure.
And I wanted to make a coconut porter that was more aggressively coconut. And Kona had the Cocoa Brown, And then around the same time as we tested our coconut porter, Black Raven Brewing Company, which is a great brewery, did the Coco Jones, which is now available in cans as well, and that's a great coconut beer. So, but since then, there's just been coconut beer after coconut beer.
Right.
And similarly with the peanut butter cup, we put that out, and you know, the next year there was like three or four more on the market.
You know, imitation is the greatest form of flattery, right? I think it's probably everybody coming up with the idea at the same time. Yeah,
I don't think we spearheaded anything necessarily, but I mean, we did the same year we put out we won a gold medal for a cucumber saison that we did. And the same year we released that, Trinity Brewing Company out of Colorado, I believe, released a cucumber saison as well. So I think
just kind of the trends of the way things are moving. You know, you know, I mean, they're probably looking at the same things you are, where, you know, culinary and things that match, and, you know, people who are really invested and smart kind of end up looking towards the same things. So,
yeah, there's nothing new under the sun is kind of what I think. So I don't think I'm going to do anything that no one's ever thought of before. Yeah. Maybe I'm going to do it differently.
Right.
And we bought, as soon as we saw, we were like, oh no, there's another cucumber saison on the market. And we bought it because we didn't know about it. And we had it and we had ours and we said, these are vastly different beers.
Yeah.
And that got us very excited because that means someone else could have the same idea as us, but the execution could be different.
The
beers are both quality products. Right. So I think it's a lot of fun. And same with the coconut and the peanut butter beers. It might be annoying to the guys who dislike that there's peanut butter in their beer, but to the people who are interested and just want to have fun,
they've got options too.
Yeah, there's options, and there's year-round options because we only have ours out for 3 months a year.
Right. Well, it's interesting because that's it's similar in comedy, because there's a lot of times where, I mean, I've had times where people are like, oh, that guy's doing your joke, and you start hearing, and you're like, well, it's a similar concept. You know, the execution's a little different, but I don't think my initial thought is like, I don't think anyone's ever stealing my joke, or there's only so many ideas out there. And, you know, eventually, if you have a beer mind or a comedy mind, eventually you're going to run into someone else out there that's had the same thought as you. You know, and again, the execution may be a little different. Luckily, it's a little easier with a brewery.
I'll get real joke. Real nerdy on you and say one of my favorite quotes of all time, and I'm not saying that what I do is art or anything, but Aristotle says art is that which touches on the universal human experience.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think in comedy, in food or beverage, in all different kinds of things that people experience, we enjoy different things because it's universally good. You know, Joe Dirt says, why is trees good? Why is boobs good? Why, you know, like, what? People just like certain things.
Yeah.
So when you tell a joke and someone else had a similar experience, you know what? People are laughing at the joke because they also had that experience.
Right,
because
it's a shared
Jerry
experience.
Jerry Seinfeld is so funny, yeah.
Yeah,
right?
Well, exactly. It's a thing that everyone can connect to, you know, and if you can make that connection, then... Yeah, and again, there's only so much out there in the universe for everyone to bring in, so...
So far, yeah.
Yeah, that we know of. I mean, all right, what's this? So the last one is the coconut porter. Now, just so there's no confusion with listeners, because this, I've talked to people, and there's a difference between coconut and cocoa in a porter. Because cocoa porters that's actually a like derivative from chocolate, or from the cocoa bean, not cocoa nut. So this is actually a coconut.
So, well, it's both, actually.
Okay.
So we have a great chocolateer. I don't know how to say it necessarily, because what we buy from them isn't their
chocolate
truffles
fancier.
And their nice stuff. We buy the cacao, the cocoa nibs. They're called Tease Chocolates in Tacoma. If you're ever in Tacoma and you like chocolate, Tease Chocolates. What she does with chocolate is amazing.
Yeah.
It's a husband and wife And Topher, the husband in the relationship, he roasts and grinds the cocoa nibs, and they are incredible. We use them in a number of our beers, but when we do chocolate in beer, we add that in there. So that's where you'll get the chocolate flavors you have in the peanut butter cup porter,
yeah,
in our dark waters imperial stout, in the coconut porter, and then we also use desiccated coconut. So desiccated coconut sounds, I don't know, evil or something, but it just means shredded. So it's shredded and roasted, and then we put that in the beer, and the end result is a beer that to us tastes very much like candy.
And it has an extremely pronounced and very good nose on it. Just,
and that's where you're going to get most of the coconut. So
yeah,
that's coconut's very volatile, I think, as far as it goes. And it's a fine line whether it tastes like suntan lotion or like coconuts.
Sure, yeah,
and,
right.
We try like, to walk
that line. Is
that
banana
line.
Boat or is
yeah,
that?
Yeah, exactly. And for me, I love Maui Brewing Company's coconut porter, but I always wanted something more.
Yeah, more robust.
So that's,
more.
That's what this beer really is. It's saying, Maui, I will drink your beer all the time. I think Garrett over there does a great job, but I want more coconut in my porter.
So how much that's a great beer, by the way. Very, very definitely pronounced coconut. The cocoa nibs actually has a little bit of a bite at the end, like not tart-ish, tart adjacent, I would say, bite at the end in a good way. But so how much are you involved with writing recipes and developing beers, and how much of that are you still doing these days?
I mean, most of it, I would say. We have a brewer that I work with, Peter, and Peter and I work together to make all of our recipes. But he just started here in February.
Okay.
Before he worked here, our last brewer, Mike, he did a great job helping me with recipes and coming up with great ideas. What I look for in brewers is innovative people who want to push the envelope, people who have big ideas,
yeah,
and people who want to work in a collaborative environment. I don't have all the greatest ideas. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, and I don't think anyone I hire should think they're the smartest guy or have the best ideas either. But I think working together, we can come up with something really great.
Right.
So at our brewery, we're always changing, evolving, and improving upon what we do. There's a few things we don't change. Like, we won't change the P51 recipe. But something would have to be wrong with it, right, for us to change.
Exactly, yeah.
But, for instance, like our Ace IPA recipe, when we first opened the brewery 6 years ago, that was the second beer we released, and it was a Belgian-style IPA. At the time, Belgian beers were really big. I love Belgian beer, still love Belgian beer. But as soon as we opened our tasting room, we found out that when we did side-by-side Belgian yeast versus American yeast in the same recipe of the Ace IPA, our customers chose American yeast and American IPA. So as palates change, we also want to be there with it. Because if we're not willing to innovate and change, we're going to, you know,
right,
get left behind. So I think something that's been great is having and being able to bring people onto our staff that have knowledge and expertise in areas I don't.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense. Yeah, filling in gaps. And here comes the train again.
Sorry.
filling in gaps and being able to work in that environment where you're putting it together. I mean, you're one brewer is always better than two.
Yeah.
And not take any one brewer, but you know, anytime you've talked about, you've done collaborative stuff.
Oh yeah.
Breweries, and it's so interesting to see when other breweries collaborate together, what they come up with, because every brewery has its own personality and their own method. So when you put those two together, it's such an interesting thing that can come out of it.
It's wild. I mean, doing collaborations is so much fun. You learn so much about yourself,
yeah,
and your process. And I mean, just working with anybody, right? It's a fantastic, like, crucible for growth. And I think if you see a collaboration beer on a beer menu, always try it. And, you know, half the time it goes well and the two people worked well together. And half the time they probably agreed too much and it was masturbatory, you know, like a circle jerk of like, you like that? I like that.
Yeah.
It's all do the same do thing. And, you know, and then it's not interesting at all.
Right. I mean, it turns out fine, but it doesn't come out special.
Yeah. It doesn't improve either of the brews. Right. But I think
you might as well have made two beers alone and then, you know.
Yeah. But I think most of the time when there's a collaboration, both breweries get better.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And in my experience, that's what happens. And just brewers talking to each other with the Brewers Guild in Washington State, with the South Sound Craft Crawler, the Inland Ale Trail.
Yep.
It brings people together, and we get to share ideas, and the kind of camaraderie that develops and that has developed is something that I think is unique to craft beer, where we can compete with each other on the store shelves or in the bar with tap handles next to each other, but at the same time, we're all doing the same thing,
right?
And it's not like we're making a ton of money at it. We're doing it because we like it.
Yeah.
And we want to learn what so-and-so does because we like what they're doing.
Well, those are the nice things about the brewery world. It seems like everyone works together pretty well. It's not and because everyone's so unique, it's not as much competition as, you know, rising tides lifts all ships. So, you know, as other breweries get better, it makes other people want to experiment with craft beer, and then they want to go to other breweries around the area, which may bring them to you, or, you know, push, you know, if they're looking for something specific, they're going to experiment and try. So,
yeah.
With, and on that note, are you going to be at do you guys go to the beer festival at Avista Stadium in Spokane?
I had an email about that today, whether or not I'm going to do that.
I think you should go. It's a good time.
Yeah, I hope we can.
All right.
I really enjoyed meeting all the brewers out there, and Spokane's a great town, So hopefully we can make it.
Well, if you're there, let me know. I will be there. I'm always there. And yeah, there's some great brewers out in Spokane. So go check it out. That weekend gets crazy, so it's a good time.
All right.
But
now I have to go.
Now you should go, yeah. So, all right. Well, guys, we're going to get out of here for the day. But again, if you're in Tacoma, go to 509.5 Puyallup Avenue in Tacoma, Washington. They're right by the Tacoma Dome. It is Wingman Brewers. You can find them all over in bottles, undrafted places. They're in Safeway. I've seen them there. You guys have Safeways around. So
yeah.
But check out the beer. Come check out the tap room sometime. It's an awesome spot, great space. Look forward to their new location opening up in 2018. So they're going to be growing, getting bigger.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Well, thanks for hanging out, Ken. I appreciate it. And for the Social Hour, I am Decent for Ken. Thanks, buddy.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, and guys, we will see you all next week.
This podcast is a Pants Pending Studios production.
And part of the Pants Pending Studios podcast network.
Find more of our great shows just by searching Pants Pending in your podcatcher.
For more information or to contact us directly, visit us at pantspending.com.
Please subscribe to this show, share it with your friends, like it on Facebook, and rate it on iTunes.
And we thank you for making us a part of your listening day.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending. Studios!